You're listening to Afternoons with Josh Zepps on ABC Radio.
G'day, g'day. Beautiful day on this 28th day of September 2020. Have you seen The Social Dilemma, the new Netflix film, which has skyrocketed to the top of Netflix's charts in many countries around the world? It's a documentary, essentially, about the dilemma of social media, and it comprises primarily interviews with whistleblowers, former Facebook and Google employees, largely, who have grown a conscience and decided to speak out about the ways in which the algorithm is manipulating you and potentially destroying the world. Last year, I wrote and performed a one-man show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, which was subtitled Why Social Media is Ruining Everything. And many of the people whose books I read in researching that piece have come together to produce this film. Tristan Harris was someone who had been working at Facebook in a senior capacity and basically one day started working on his own document, which he wanted to disseminate to his Facebook colleagues, about the extent to which they weren't thinking about the impact of this technology on society and culture, but the extent to which they were simply treating it as a profit-making company and assuming that all connection is good connection, regardless of whether or not that connection is between an aunt and her niece or between a Russian bot and an uninformed voter. And Tristan's document that he disseminated to Facebook shook the company and shook a lot of people inside the company. He's become something of an ethics guru for Silicon Valley, and he's the central protagonist of this film. If you've seen it, or if you have questions or concerns about your own relationship to social networks, I'd love to hear from you. Mark Pesce is with us, who's a futurist and technologist who thinks a lot about this stuff. For the next half hour, we're going to dig into the impact that social media is having, as depicted in the movie on Netflix, The Social Dilemma. G'day, Mark.
G'day.
Shall we just take a listen to a clip, about 50 seconds of The Social Dilemma, to give people who haven't seen it yet a bit of a taste?
What I want people to know is that everything they're doing online is being watched, is being tracked, is being measured. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded. Exactly what image you stop and look at, for how long you look at it. Oh yeah, seriously, for how long you look at it.
They know when people are lonely, they know when people are depressed, they know when people are looking at photos of your ex-romantic partners, they know what you're doing late at night, they know the entire thing.
Whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, or what kind of neuroses you have, what your personality type is like.
They have more information about us than has ever been imagined in human history. It is unprecedented.
That's a clip from The Social Dilemma. Mark, when you play it like that, it all sounds rather conspiratorial and overblown. But what is the fundamental criticism that the movie presents?
So basically what we've done, particularly Facebook and Google are under the microscope here, but really almost all social media companies do this to some degree, is that they track all of your activities. And again, how long you look at something, what your reaction is to it, they do their best to work out your emotional state. And then they keep a model, they build a model of you. You know, in the film, they actually show a little sort of almost avatar, a little 3D model being built. But you can think of it as a bit of a computer program. And they're using fairly sophisticated artificial intelligence to build that model so that they can predict how you will react to something before it's given to you. So they can then give you the thing all of the time that's going to cause you to be the most reacted. To increase engagement is what they call it technically. But really what they're doing is they're building systems that are using artificial intelligence to create a feedback that is addicting us to their sites.
So the measurement of success in Silicon Valley is called TOS, which is time on site. And basically, they just want you to spend as much time as possible on the site. And the way that they get you to do that is through engagement, which means swiping, clicking, liking, commenting, sharing, all of that sort of stuff, which is a good indication that you're going to spend more time on on the site. What's the problem with that? I mean, isn't the purpose of this radio show to basically have people listen to this show instead of other shows? Isn't everything that we produce in the media an attempt to grab someone's attention?
Unless there has been a dramatic technology upgrade at the ABC, Josh.
Oh.
The ABC is not connected to a huge artificial intelligence, which is watching the individual reactions of all of the listeners and then tuning our conversation in real time to make it more engaging on an individual level for each of those listeners. So what we're talking about is not quite apples and oranges, but more like Apple and spacecraft, right? It's just that different.
Right. Your point being that if there are 500,000 listeners to ABC Radio, then at least they're all getting the same feed of ABC Radio. But what social media companies are doing is producing 500,000 uniquely tailored radio shows, essentially, comprising articles, photos, shared bits of information and so on, that their algorithms are estimating is going to be most liked by each particular user.
Right. And you can tell if you pop onto someone else's Netflix or YouTube landing screen, generally what you'll see is I don't know about any of these shows. I don't know about any of these videos, because our experiences are so tailored out of this vast sea of content that we all have access to. These algorithms learn how to tailor it and throw up exactly what they think we will want to watch. And they continue to do that. And every choice we make, every swipe we make, every like we make, every share we make goes back into furthering that engagement, goes back into helping that machine do a better job selecting for us what we should watch.
If you've tried to cut down on your social media use, if you feel like it's interfering with your focus or your concentration, if you have concerns about its impact on young people, on teens and preteens, if you have a question for Mark Pesce, this is a good opportunity to ask it. 0467 922 702 is the text line. 0467 922 702. Or if you want to go into bat for social media companies, I'd love to hear that argument too. You can also give us a call on 1-300-222-702. Someone writes on the text line, Mark, Blake writes, it seems like from what your guest is saying, Josh, the ABC needs to get with it. So maybe we should be producing 500,000 different radio shows tailor-made. So then the next question is, okay, so social media feeds are producing precisely the content that each individual is likeliest to find interesting. The next question is, so what? If they find it interesting, isn't that good?
Well, there's a question. I mean, this is where it gets very hairy, because in fact, what we found out is that YouTube radicalizes people into ISIS or into QAnon or into whatever thing, so that it develops immediately these rabbit holes, because again, there's a feedback going on. It's not just you sitting there and picking. It's you sitting there and picking and being lured into things that the machine knows will lure you into picking more things. So it will tend to lure you into what they call a rabbit hole, where you're just finding more and more stuff like the stuff that you've just liked to keep you in the rabbit hole. And so all of a sudden, everything that's being fed into your head is of one flavor, whether that's an anti-vaxxer or someone who believes that COVID-19 is caused by 5G or whatever it might be. So these algorithms essentially end up feeding you so much information that your brain is now awash in information that is false. You start acting on that information as if it were true, because it's the information that you've been fed, and now we have a problem.
It's on the text line, one of our listeners named Sally asked a great question, Mark, which is, she says, I'm still in the dark about how people see any of this on Facebook. I don't. I interact with friends and family who I know in real life and just never see any of the pushed politics, see more on Twitter as ads. Can you explain that to people who don't see this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess for people who don't see it, the algorithm knows that there's no point in feeding you that, and therefore it won't. And so it basically taking advantage of one casual like or one casual glance. So these people, I suspect, if you took a look at a population sample, would be on sort of one side of it. They're the ones who kind of never look over the wall to sort of see what's going on. And that means that social media works very well for them when they're connecting to friends and family. But for most people using it most of the time, who will peek over into these various other areas, it will become an accelerant.
Mm. And to clarify for Sally, I think the way that it functions is that somebody does have to have somebody who you're friends with or who's a friend of a friend does have to have liked or shared something or commented on something for it to show up in your feed. It's not that it's being injected in there by Facebook algorithms that have nothing to do with your your circle. You need to have either liked a product or a political party or something, and it'll be because you liked this, therefore we're delivering you that, or so-and-so commented on this. So if you're utilizing Facebook purely as a place to only be friends with people you know in real life and never engage with anything else and not to, for example, like public pages, then it's entirely possible that you are completely free from this. But that's not the way that most people use Facebook. But I think, Mark, it is interesting that a lot of people, I also feel like, come on, what are you talking about, like seeing Facebook pages about Hillary Clinton is a secret murderer, pedophile or something? I mean, this is just nonsense. I don't see any of that on Facebook. But that's part of the pernicious thing. You only see it if you're the type of person who's likely to be influenced by it.
Exactly. And that influence starts as, again, just a very sort of almost a weakness. And this is one of, I think, the most interesting points that's made quite clearly by Tristan Harris in the film, is that we worry about this super AI coming and wiping us all out, the Skynet version. What we've actually created and what already exists is an AI that can tickle us at our weak points so that it can overwhelm our weaknesses rather than overwhelming our strengths. And this is what's essentially happening, is that by going in after our likes, after the things that engage us, they found the soft underbelly for all of us.
Okay, yes, elaborate on that. So by targeting our weaknesses, they're achieving what?
They're achieving engagement. But again, by targeting our weaknesses, what they're doing is they're deepening. In other words, they're using the weaknesses as a way in to get, you don't want to say their claws in, but to get their hands on our attention, to basically to monopolize our attention. Now, what happens once our attention is monopolized is the thing that, if you listen to everyone in the film, seems to be more of an accident. We didn't mean to turn this into an engine for radicalizing people into ISIS or into QAnon or whatever, but that ends up being the effect of this optimizing for engagement.
Ingrid's given us a call. G'day, Ingrid.
Oh, hi, Josh. Enjoying your program.
Thanks.
My daughter lives in the UK, and we talk once a week we were talking about my son's wedding coming up and wedding present. She said, well, why don't you look at Etsy for an idea? Now, I haven't looked at Etsy for a long time, but what was the first thing that came up in my Facebook feed this morning? Was Etsy.
Yeah.
Have a look here for presents. I was on Messenger and we were talking. I wasn't texting. We were talking. And the first thing that came up in my feed was, have a look at Etsy.
So you didn't type it in. You were just talking verbally. I got to suspect that that's a coincidence, Ingrid. Mark, do you know of any evidence that they're actually using voice recognition? I don't think that's a thing yet.
It is technically possible. We don't think that happens. It does get anecdotally reported quite a bit, Josh. And this is the thing, is that in some ways we need to be able to respect the enormous technological news of someone like a Facebook. And in another way, we're thinking, nah, that's just not going to happen at scale. But on the other hand, you have Amazon with all of their Alexa devices that were listening to people when they shouldn't have been, and they just patched that bug last month. So,
yeah, but Alexa is made for that. We know that Alexa's listening to us.
Yes.
I mean, the thing about Ingrid, the thing about concerns like that, I would, if I had to make an educated guess, what's probably happened is that your search patterns are concurrently directing the algorithm towards a suspicion that you're going to want to purchase something at the same time as you're having this conversation. So it's either a coincidence or it's informed by other data that you're unaware of in the background of your behavior that is not directly the verbal conversation. And then my concern about getting hung up with, ooh, are they listening to us? Are they snooping on our conversations and then transcribing it? Is you don't even need that for it still to be really pernicious. You know what I mean? Like, why have a conspiracy theory when the conspiracy is right here?
And if we unroll it in the context of what they talked about in the film, your daughter very well may have been on Etsy. And if she was using Facebook would have been tracking her into Etsy. Facebook would have known that you were having a conversation with your daughter because that would have been tracked
yes,
on Messenger.
That's a good point. Yep.
And so it's very easy to see.
So you've been communicating with someone who just liked Etsy or was following Etsy on her feed. That's actually probably the likeliest mechanism. Thanks, Ingrid.
But
do you feel a bit creepy now?
Oh, very. I mean, this isn't the first instance. Very, very. But this is not the first instance of those things happening. But am I going to stop using it, as your producer asked me? Well, no, it's the convenience factor. I can just pick up my phone and and I can either have a textual or a phone conversation with my daughter in the UK. Am I going to lose that convenience and not talk to her?
Mm. No, no, you don't have to. But just, I think, I mean, one of the recommendations that the people on the Social Dilemma say is, it's it. You know, if you want to use it, then use it, but don't use it in it. Don't abide by its suggestions. Don't follow its mandates.
Yeah.
Don't adhere to what its algorithm is feeding you. You know, if you want to go to YouTube, this is something that Jaron Lanier says, if you want to go to YouTube and watch something, then you type your search term in and you select what you're going to watch. Don't accept the recommendations, otherwise you're a lab rat. Thanks, Ingrid.
Thanks.
Thank you. Lots of people online also, Mark, on the text line saying that that they have a suspicion of the about the same thing, where they're talking about something and then they think that you know, they think that the social media company is listening in on their conversation. Ross in Potts Point says, hi, Josh, I did find it ironic that Netflix recommended Social Dilemma as a show I might like, given that it's a documentary about the evils of big corporations knowing so much about me. It's a good point. And Sue writes, Josh, I spend a lot of time debunking and correcting health and science misinformation on social media. Facebook's algorithm often interprets this as an interest in alternative health services and throws up ads for me. I take this as a further opportunity to debunk. We need to work with full knowledge of the aims and methods of social media providers. It's just another business. It's not just another business, though, is it, Mark? Precisely because it knows so much. And to sort of, you know, not to, to kind of give a spoiler for, of the film, the ultimate conclusion is that if all of us are consuming a different version of reality, even if it's just slightly different, a slightly different spin in our news content, a slightly different interpretation of what's going on in the world, then it's going to be very hard to maintain coherent societies and cultures that don't devolve into disagreements and potentially eventually civil wars if you have 25 million Australians all consuming 25 million different versions of the truth.
Yes, or 330 million Americans consuming 330 million different versions of the truth. And I think you can see that maintaining any sort of coherence in the age of social media, so particularly since 2010 or so, has become more and more difficult precisely because differences are being amplified by algorithm. And again, this was an unintended side effect. And this is clearly, when you take a look at the unintended side effects, these then become the points that we have to go, all right, how do we fix these things? Because yes, social media is great for staying connected to people, but we can we have that without it becoming this great difference engine that's just amplifying difference between people? Because if we can't, then the price of being connected is that our civilization is going to implode.
Martin's given us a call. G'day, Martin.
G'day, Josh. How are you?
I'm well. You're a high school teacher?
Yes, some 25 years in the job. And I can say I've noticed a huge difference in concentration levels amongst my students, including myself. When I'm at home, obviously on holidays, so to speak now, I've got the smartphone, the tablet, and the laptop open, you know, answering work emails, doing work, and so on and so forth. But definitely, students' concentration levels have plummeted in the last 5 years. And I speak to colleagues from other schools around Sydney, interstate, and including overseas, and they're all reporting the same thing. It's not limited to one system, public or private, and it's a real worrying trend. And what's worse is that students prefer to listen to AirPods or headphones whilst learning in the class, and I haven't got any evidence to say that they're performing worse than those who are listening to me. So that's a worrying trend. I don't know what to say. I was wondering if you guys could comment on that, please.
Well, thank you, Martin. Just one question for you. There's some research by Jonathan Haidt in the States about a rise in anxiety and depression and self-harm, especially among girls aged sort of 12 to 16. Have you experienced anything like that, any rise in mental issues?
Definitely, but I would say it's not limited to girls. I think it's pretty much even amongst the genders, boys and girls. Definitely.
Thanks.
And what with COVID and what's happened this year, and Zoom classes and so on and so forth, and some students sort of losing pretty much most of the year, it's pretty awful, I have to say.
Yeah. Martin, thanks for the call. Mark, yeah, you can talk to the challenges that are faced by adolescents to have themselves constantly being not just sort of addicted to the clickiness of social media, but also permanently subsumed by the judginess and the yeah. status anxiety of being around their peers online 24/7.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about particularly that age, that the adolescent middle school to early high school, is when those parts of the brain that really help us negotiate social interactions in groups of people are really coming into their own. So children are learning how to become adults and guide themselves into social interactions. So they're very conscious of these interactions in a way that grownups are perhaps a little bit more relaxed about. And to put an amplifier in that, that is now giving you not just what the 10 people you might see on any day might think about you or you might think about them, but now the 10,000 people you're going to see on Instagram or Facebook are thinking and commenting on, is a kind of amplifier that perhaps we need to be much more careful about with regard to introducing kids to. Because even as adults, we're having trouble with this. You can see adults are not handling this perfectly, but a child is literally trying to master those skills because they're brand new to them, as well as skills being brand new to the culture as a whole.
I've got at least 50 text messages, Mark, from people saying that they believe that Facebook can listen to them. Lucy in Lennox Head saying, I was looking at a menu and saw French toast. I mentioned to my husband that I hadn't cooked that for a long time. Later that day, French toast kept coming into my feed. And Paul writing, I mentioned a person I hadn't spoken about in over 30 years, and after being on Facebook, they recommended them as a friend less than an hour later. What's interesting here, Mark, is that if, as is likely the case, there is no Facebook does not listen to you and spy on what you're saying, then all of these people, I mean, just try to fathom how good the Facebook algorithm is at piecing together what you want out of the exhaust fumes of everything else that you're doing, that people think that it's literally listening to them, even when it's not.
Yes. Yeah, Facebook is so good at profiling us, it doesn't need to listen to us, Josh. That's the kind of scary thing.
And we
here,
don't
right?
even we're not even aware that we're exhibiting yeah. behaviors that would suggest to an algorithm that we're interested in French toast. You know, to us it seems like the only time we've said French toast is just when we said the words, and yet there are all these other things that we're doing that Facebook is so smart it's able to understand that French toast is in our future.
Exactly. So, and then you become radicalized to French toast because Facebook just feeds you more and more items about French
toast.
More
extreme French toast porn or something. Yeah. Yes, it's a tragedy. Don't want to go down that rabbit hole. One person on the text line says, isn't it the case that this is just doing what we've always done, but much better? Election polls, TV and radio polls, work engagement surveys, in-store sales reports, et cetera, ad nauseum. The difference is the capacity to individualize, not the attempt to reach the needs, desires, interests. That's as old as religion and democracy and anything else, where one group tries to read and influence others.
But the difference here is that this is also connected to very sophisticated machine learning systems, which are brand new. Machine learning is something we've really only been able to do for about the past decade because we just didn't have enough computer power for it. So these machines are not just trying to influence, but they're also learning as they're going. And that is qualitatively different. It is literally like you have someone who's very smart and also very surveillant, always watching you, constantly watching your reaction and then changing what they're doing based on that reaction. And, you know, in a more sophisticated terms, if a person was doing that to you, you'd either call that a cult or you'd call that brainwashing, right? Where someone's really trying to manipulate you in that way. These machines are doing it because that's what they've been designed to do, and they're doing it for 2.5 billion Facebook users.
Mark, we've only got less than a minute left, but you mentioned during the news that you were a little bit concerned that the social dilemma, this Netflix film, doesn't give us any advice about what we should do about this. What's your 1 minute, what's your 60-second elevator pitch about what we can do?
So I think, first off, turn off all the notifications that you can live without, and then take a look at the ones you can't live without and ask yourself why you can't live without them, and then turn those off too. All right. That's just at an individual level. I think at a collective level, we actually have to probably make legislation that makes it very hard for a company to hook profiling that's watching you all the time to artificial intelligence. I think that should only be used in very specific cases that you have to be informed about. But to use it as a general business practice turns out probably not healthy, and so needs to be heavily regulated.
Mark, great to talk to you, as always. Thanks for being here and scaring me, as you always tend to.
Thank you, Josh.
Thanks. That's Mark Pesce, the futurist and technologist, talking about the social dilemma, this new film on Netflix that has a lot of people talking and is one of the most popular properties on Netflix in a number of different countries. It's essentially interviews with whistleblowers from social media companies who are encouraging us all to understand that what you see on social media is not just a kind of a haphazard aggregation of interesting things that your friends are posting, but a highly sophisticated attempt to control your consciousness and perhaps all of society and culture.
You're listening to Afternoons with Josh Zepps on ABC Radio.